Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, y'all? That's Chuck D, Fight the Power. What's happening? It's that time again. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Case, Son, and Friends. My friends, Brother Wayne Gilman, Brother Byron Saunders. And this is a Thursday, if you're paying attention. No, it's not Wednesday, but we can do this any day we want. Wednesday is usually the day we like to keep people on your toes. We like to keep you on your toes like Rick DeSantis like to keep the teenagers on their toes by throwing them a little curveball. You know what's an interesting thing, and probably even more despicable against a punk-ass governor who would chide children because they're spoiling his photo op. And yeah, that's some punk-ass shit. That's some little bitch shit. And make a face. Oh, come on, man. They're kids. So what, you're gonna kind of take it out on the kids because you want to have your photo op? Do you? Do you make your points, believe in what you believe, but don't bring it up to people, make fun of people because your point is too weak to get across. And that's just so stupid, it's unbelievable, because that's why I begin to think that the system is rigged, because it is too easy to beat these individuals. They are criminals. Pick a case in point. Orange Julius, Donnie, comes out and praises Trump, praises Putin, as does a few of the other, clearly, just make it plain racist. I feel them. I like to, you know, I like people to be right out front, make it plain how you feel, so I can't be mad at that. But the fact that they come out and praise Putin the CPAC weekend, and the very next day, I guess they praise him Friday or Saturday, the very next day, Putin bombs a residential district, a residential building in Ukraine. I don't mean to laugh, but it's just so friggin' ridiculous that they're down with a guy who, you know, Putin is a gangster. You know, we know what he is. And I don't know why everybody, the rest of the world, try to act like he's gangster president. That's what Trump tried to be, the mob president. But he didn't have Putin skills or whatever. That's why he came out, and, you know, that's why he gravitated to those type of individuals, because he wants to be that. Y'all know we're on record. I'm on record for saying that a couple of years ago. My mom is on record of really being doing a Nostradamus bit and calling him straight up, calling him Hitler. Yeah, bruh. If you remember, I would try to like downplay it, but she was right. You know, he's a racist, and that's true and clear, and a criminal and a cowardly guy. You know, we know that too, because these are people who would encourage people to do their dirty work and not have the gumption to stand up, you know. And I'm kind of going off track a little bit, but just as I think about it, there's something to be said about a formidable opponent, someone who is willing to fight for their beliefs, to live and die for their beliefs. So even in the Civil War, you know, you had the rebel fighting against the Union Army. But these are people who were willing to die for what they believed in. And oftentimes what you had even back then is the higher-ups, the landowners, the people that had status were usually the officers. And people didn't have any money where the infantry ones actually putting their lives on the line, as is the case in America since day one. And for some reason, individuals think that just because their skin color is same as those individuals who are pimping them, that that will keep them from being pimped. Well, I guess they just take solace and it keeps them from being pimped as hard as black people. So I guess that's good enough for them. The foot on their neck, I guess they think that progress. we kind of go by the Malcolm X theory, that just because you take a knife out of my back that's in my back 6 inches and you take it out 3 inches, that's not really progress. And so something I would suggest to them, some of the white folks out there that might want to follow Trump and all that, the kind of racist trope that happened to be kind of a little lower down the spectrum. The economic spectrum is what we say in the black community, that all skin folk ain't kin folk. Just a word of advice, if you're willing to take it, have the ear to listen. Just wanted to say that. So when you get a jackass like DeSantis telling people, there's kids, to take it off, you know, and here's the discerning thing about it. Because if you're in these environments, when an elected official, quote, important person is going to be around and make an appearance, one of the things that some of the advanced people might say is everybody vaxxed, believe it or not. In the case of a pandemic, is everybody vaxxed? Who has this and that and that? You might have to wear a mask. They kind of promote that when you're going to be around these important people. I know that because, as many of you know, my cousin is in government, and to be certain places, to be around the vice president, the president. When the vice president came here to Jersey and thanked my cousin for the work he's done with infrastructure at Amtrak, they had to get COVID tested, and they had to wear a mask. So sometimes that's a requirement, just a protocol of the elected official, and I'm sure that might have been somewhat of the requirement. There, maybe someone told them, yeah, we know that this is state, but some people in the state, in that state, regardless of whether what the boss man done say, some people are following the science. So, and particularly in Tampa, where they have a high incidence of the COVID, where they do are wearing the masks. So someone probably said, you're going to be around the governor, this is high, you guys might want to wear a mask in an attempt to protect him. That's the ironic thing. He's going to come and show out in front of them. He knows that. If you're in the system, you know that. That's what they do. This is just continuous examples of these people that are full of shit, disingenuous, and they're pimping people, you know? And so, you know, I've stopped, you know, many of us on Facebook have cut people off, friends from high school and people that happen to be believing in the white supremacy. They, you know, speak anymore. And I've spoken to other minorities, a few. There weren't a lot in my high school that seemed to be active like I am on Facebook. There was a small percentage of us minorities in high school when I was growing up. You know, we were the wave moving to the suburbs after the civil rights generation. We were the civil rights generation's kids. So we moved out away after some uprisings in inner city areas and such and moved to what would be liberal suburban communities. So I was part of that first wave of generation. Maybe there was a generation before us, but consistently across the board during that time period in the country, and I'm sure the fellas and Bob will confirm that, we were part of that first generation. So many of us were the only ones in our class at the time, things like that, even though there was a larger percentage than probably the previous generation, I'm sure we were still in a minority, an extreme minority. So fast forward to adulthood. And you're catching up on Facebook, high school people. Some people have grown into maybe their preordained perspectives about life. And, you know, we don't speak to them anymore. But I've decided I'm going to try and reach out to them because I at least owe it to those white kids that went to school with me that believe in the Trump and the racist shit and all that because they know, you know, about my family. Obviously, family was politically active. So they kind of know that I have a certain amount of knowledge that probably the average person wouldn't have, and I could probably explain some things. And also they've watched over the years how my family members have served in elected positions. So I think they would give a certain amount of validity to what I might have to say. So I'm going to start trying to engage them in some sort of little podcast issue to try and help to enlighten even some of the misguided Caucasians that are caught up in the myth of the white supremacy in America that has really caused everybody to be in a prison and in a mental cell in ourselves to be held bound by these boundaries, bullshit-ass boundaries that these people have made up. You know, I'm thinking about the State of the Union the other night. I'm going to bring the fellas in here in a minute. But, you know, you had people nowadays, this is what I was saying, you know, I call myself one of the last of the baby boomers. That generation. And we remember when Russia was our mortal enemy, the Cold War. Yes, they're talking about it's revisited now. And that's why we're still mad at Cuba, ain't it? because they were there with Khrushchev, Kennedy, Khrushchev, Cuban Missile Crisis, la-da-la-da-la. We were not down with Russia. And so much so that during the 70s, I can remember that they had something called détente, I believe, where they tried to work out the issues between the two countries. Let us cool the temperature a little bit so we aren't on the brink of nuclear war and don't have another Cold War. That was the thing. And so we were trying to develop relationships, better the relationships. You know, Gorbachev, tear down the wall, Mr. Gorbachev. You remember Ronnie saying that? And then Clinton and Yeltsin. You know, kind of. Relations were somewhat good. And then what's-his-face comes in and they tend to sour again, talking about Putin. So our history has been, at least the history that those who run the country at the time and built this whole system of a dominant supremacy and other things, it's interesting to me that their kids and descendants and just ignorant motherfuckers who don't know and understand history, that we were never down with Russia. You're not going to say appear at functions. How about for Putin and actually have elected officials praise him? Ignorantly so, because, like I said, 2 days later, he murdered some more people. Yeah, you can't make this shit up. But just the fact that they're ignorant enough to allow themselves to be saying, we support this guy over an American president, and to, much less to have an American president be on other foreign soil and say, I don't believe my guys. I believe this guy. Wow. We truly are a country of individuals who do not know history. And those two jackass broads that were heckling Joe Biden, I didn't see the State of the Union because I was involved in a function here, but also because I kind of knew, I was surprised that there was so much bipartisan support, I guess, when he was talking about the situation with Russia and Ukraine. But to have these two idiot broads who know nothing about the decorum of what goes on with the State of the Union and much less Washington. And this is why I said what's trippy, that these people, they made the system. They developed this system of government in the United States that has been a white supremacist perpetuating system. But laws, government, we're making up these structures and systems and how we're going to work and blah, blah, blah. They made the system. And now when the system starts working that they made and it starts working in its purity because they didn't write out, they didn't actually put down on paper their true objective was to perpetuate white supremacy. They just put down a pure system of society and ways society could work and the best way it could evolve and things like that. So the letter of the law suggests, doesn't say, and as they tried to, in the gray areas, kind of suggest the racism, it hasn't quite come through. So lo and behold, there come people who believe in what you wrote, believe that the notions and the ideas that you put down, they believe that you're going to follow the rules that you made up at least. So you don't get to make up, then you don't get to sort of turn the table over, turn over the Monopoly game when it ain't working out in your favor because you're losing. You don't get to do that. That just makes you seem like a baby, someone who's not prepared for the realities of the world or just wants it the way they want it, like a Putin, and you're going to be a gangster motherfucker all your life trying to run people. That's what I think. And let me bring the fellas in right now, get their 2-3 cents. Brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. How you doing tonight, brother?
My brother, good to be on the air with you. As you know, I'm here down here in the Washington, D.C. And, of course, with all things being politics, okay, let me start off with the State of the Union. You're right about those two white broads, those two racist white broads who consider themselves to be part of the body politic are no more than grifters, gangsters, thugs, and poor white trash, okay? And if anything, I'm in favor of removing them immediately. They don't deserve to be in the body. They're not representing even the people that they represent in their constituents. That's all shade and smoking mirrors, as we may say. I could call it something else, but I'm trying to be a really good Christian guy today. But they're really pushing me to the last point of my nerves here because, you know, we didn't get the truckers. You know, they plotted to come and block up Washington, D.C. That didn't happen. So, you know, we got a bunch of
because they lifted the mandate. They didn't have nothing to come and protest about. The mandate was lifted.
That's right. But Let's go to what happened in Ukraine. As you see, and I said this several weeks ago, I acknowledge that we got some black brothers and sisters in Ukraine. And sure enough, racism has exploded because they're considered to be less than the Ukrainians. Racism, blocking them from leaving so that they can stay by, I guess, and catch hell. So understanding that we are everywhere, Eric Wayne, we are everywhere. Don't you think? Don't think that there's no black Irishman, no black Russian, no black Chinese, no black Japanese. Black people are in every of this globe. We are the first man, and we are still first man in every one of those countries. That saying that comes back to the United States, because at the point at which I'm kind of happy that maybe some of this is happening, because we need a backbone. Our Justice Department needs to prove that they know what they're doing and go after those who committed treason. Just this yesterday, last night, you may know this or may not know this, but the 1-6 committee, for the first time, stepping in the ring to declare that they committed, they being Trump, committed treasonous acts. It's a statement of fact, okay? And this is what we're going to have to come to, gentlemen, is that the facts have been there for 5-6 years. I don't know it took them so long to get there, but I guess, so, you know, the arc of justice is slow, and we have to do it step by step by step, and they're missing no step, because when Benny Thompson, I like to consider him now as Benny and the Jet, Benny and the Jet got up there and said, okay, we have enough evidence to show proof of criminal liability to Trump and his entire administration.
Right.
But see, we don't need to stop there. The fact that they have the proof on those guys also is indicative of the fact that all of a sudden some of the GOP members want to do an off-ramp because they don't want to be tried for treason. Their names are in the book. They got Russian money. It's so provable. It's like follow the yellow brick road, guys. This is easy math. You know, Trump was in debt to everybody. Not a single bank would give him a loan to get him out of his debt. But where did he get the money from? From the Russian oligarch. And you can best be sure the only reason why someone would hold fealty to a criminal like him is because he's got stuff on them as it relates to the money that they got. The entire GOP got money from the Russian oligarch. And that's all provable. Now, what else do we need? We need to arrest them. Because right now, not arresting Trump is giving pause to Putin to do what he's doing. And you all know I'm a really nonviolent person. I walk it, talk it, eat it, sleep it. This is Lent, 40 days and 40 nights. You know what I do for Lent? I try to be a better nonviolent person. I try never to use words that will incite violence or fear. You know how hard that is, given in the world that we live in right now, where everybody wants to get in your face and confront you like they duke it out? No. This is the time of the year where we're supposed to understand why we're supposed to appreciate nonviolence and peace. And suddenly, it's kind of interesting that it's happening right now. Now, you couldn't write a better script, but truth that has been crushed to earth is rising again in a way that they can't stop it. Not Putin, not Trump, not Mitch McConnell, not even the Bobarts or Bebarts or whoever they may be, or Taylor Greene, whatever. They cannot stop the revelation of their crime and the truth of their criminality and committing treason. We have to go after them. And once we do, you know, the rest of the world might get right again. So I'll stop right there. That's Women's Month. That's honest with women.
Right. All right, let's bring in Wayne Gilman, you know? Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen.
The floor, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I am so appreciative of the conversation, and again, I had a certain amount of hope and promise within me when maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago our distinguished historian Byron Saunders said that white people don't fight white people, there'll be no war. I'm not quoting you verbatim, but I think that was the gist of what you said. You know, but listen, brother, you know, listen, we did have World War One and Two. So, you know, yep. I would hate to think that we're on the precipice of three. But, you know, I was listening to what you were saying earlier, Eric, that, you know, and Byron, you know, the whole racism factor in all this, you know, with respect to the Ukraine nationals trying to leave the country. It's laudable that those go back to fight. You know, I'm reminded of the days of Vietnam. Of course, you gentlemen are way too young to remember those days, how, you know, the United States Air Forces were superior, and they still are, but it's the ground fight that kept us in that fight for years, that war for years, until Nixon said, okay, enough is enough already. We need to just end this because we ain't getting anywhere. But what bothers me about this whole thing, it's just sad to see that, as your mother said, this Hitler wannabe would go ahead and do what he did to sort of bring about a restoration of what was once the USSR. And I believe that he's such a megalomaniac like his boy, the Orange Man, that he would not stop at Ukraine, that he will try to, you know, engage some of those countries that have become part of NATO that was once, you know, part of the USS structure. And, you know, it just amazes me how we still have this back and forth with our own media with respect to what is going on. But I'm glad, because I did watch most of the address the other night, and I'm glad that some of these Republicans, you know, stood up and showed their support, that at least there's some that can understand the consequences of showing that divisiveness is not something that we need to be exuding at this time. And just getting back to the whole racial thing, I am saddened that, you know, you have students from Africa, mostly the Caribbean, and I'm talking about Indian or Indian ancestry, maybe Caribbean-born, Indian ancestry, blacks from Africa, who are studying because they can't get a decent education in the freaking Caribbean, but they go over there to try to become doctors and nurses and whatever
Let's not denigrate the Caribbean.
I'm not trying to denigrate. Okay, listen to what I have to say. I'm Caribbean background, so if anybody wants to call up and take me on, I don't give a damn, because the same way these other countries are extracting Ukrainian nationals, we should be reaching out diplomatically, because the racism is still pervasive, you know, in places like Hungary. They'll take in white folks, but they'll leave, you know, I don't want to use that word, but they'll leave us on the side and fend for ourselves. The Indians have an organization, I can't pronounce the name, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but they can go back to India to escape what's going on. Jamaica, I have to say, opened their doors to allow even white Ukrainians to come, because this thing is volatile. But we need to have a global mindset. We have CARICOM, and what the expletive deleted are you doing? You know, this is affecting everybody's economy. And so what? There may be only one or two Trinidadians of note in Ukraine. 26 Jamaican students coming, you know, only getting out today. But what about all the Africans who have nowhere to freaking go because they can't leave? You mean you couldn't work something out for them? That's what I'm talking about. I'm proud of my roots. But when we mess up, as you would say from time to time, fuck up and fart, pardon me for even going.
Wait, who's the we? You kind of turn it in on.
I'm talking about CARICOM. I'm talking about the Caribbean community market. All these nations that should be looking at people of color who've been caught up innocently in this in this situation.
Right.
And some effort should be made.
You're saying they're not doing it?
Even if they come from Sudan or come from Tanzania or South Africa, these people are caught up in something they didn't intend to go into. When they went overseas to study whatever their ambition were in terms of getting an education.
I get all that, but you seem to be particularly taking issue with the nation, the Caribbean nations, as opposed to the U.S.
Because
I
don't see where there's enough effort being made.
I see. Okay.
By my brothers and sisters in that region.
Okay.
You know, just because it's Eastern Europe doesn't mean that, you know, people are bleeding. And I was watching, was it Joy Reid or maybe the lawyer who comes on before her. And they had this interview with someone, an African, you know, and it was pretty apparent based on the conversation that he was trying to leave, but the group of Africans that he was with had nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. All the other nationals, Ukrainian nationals, were boarding trains to go somewhere to seek shelter.
Well, he's not a Ukrainian.
And I'm just saying, you know, here it is, racism rearing its ugly head again, you know, as to who's the priority and who's not. And that's what I got out of that, and I became angry. And I started, you know, doing some research on what was going on. And I'm just saying, hey, man, you know, we have to think
global. In
your
research, you came across that the fact that the Caribbean nations, I don't know what com you're talking about.
Well, the thing is that
they weren't stepping up? Is that what you found out through your research or what?
Yeah, that there are a number. I mean, this isn't the only time I've been looking at it. Just a couple of days ago, you know, it was brought to my attention that there are a lot of Caribbean people studying in Ukraine because they can't get it out of the university.
That the organization. What is that organization that you said, CINCOM or CARICOM or whatever?
Oh, CARICOM. I'm sorry. It's the Caribbean Community and Common Market. It's like the NATO. The best description would be the NATO of the Caribbean region.
So you've done
the Caribbean countries.
Got that. You've done some research, and you found that they weren't helping out Caribbean nationals.
And I think that, you know, as someone of color and someone of mixed ancestry, I'm just saying, hey, this isn't the time, you know, to sit there and play Noah's Ark. You know, two come and two of these and two of that, and you know, there's a
damn
war that's going on there.
Found, they're not doing what they could be. They're not opening the doors. Not
what
doing
they,
much,
what I feel, I mean, they're taking care. They are taking care of their respective nationals. I think Jamaica was the only island that I read recently that opened its doors to everybody.
Got it. Yeah. So your issue is that they're just not opening their doors to everyone, or they're not opening their...
And that's it. I mean,
they're taking only their nationals and not other dark-skinned people.
Right, exactly. Africans, other Indians, you know. And even whites who've been affected by it. I'm certain a lot of them would want to get out of the cold.
I understand that. From that perspective, but here's where I am. I wanted to see black people help. That's why I was grilling you like that. Because when you say, well, even whites... they can take care of themselves, right? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. If your contingent point is when you always say, and we're not doing enough, I just want to make sure when you say that, we're not doing enough for our own. Because I don't like the notion that we're not doing enough to help everybody. Because we've always done more than enough to help everybody. So when we make criticism, when we're criticizing the larger, and when somebody always says, and by the way, we need to, I just, you know, I'm not always looking at it like that, always looking to criticize us in the same vein that I'm criticizing the larger group, because the larger group is more responsible for shit than we are to ourselves. That's what I'm saying. So I understand self-help and all that, but I just look at things a little bit differently. I don't always look at it and say and talk about and also give us criticism when I'm giving criticism to the predominating factor of a problem. I'm not always going to say, and I need to be doing this, because sometimes that responsibility solely rests where it needs to rest, and we ain't got shit to do with it. You feel me? So
I understand what you're saying. From your American perspective, I understand that, but I'm talking about the regional people
black people to stop being concerned about other groups so much because that's been our fucking downfall. Look at us in the Democratic Party here in the United States.
Right.
This is what I'm talking about when we have an issue, we have a program, and then all of a sudden all these other damn groups want to join us, and all of a sudden our program and our issue gets diluted, distracted,
it's lost
and misled.
The source.
So
exactly.
Fuck everybody else, and we need to work on our own stuff, and we need to be transactional. So when somebody says, and we need to look at ourselves, no, man. At this point, no. It ain't our fault this time. We're not complicit in our own shit here. There's 90% of the fault lies in another group, and maybe 10 to 15% that might have done ourselves. But that 10%, 15% doesn't mean that I'm always going to mention and the bad shit we're doing too. No, because 90% of the fucking shit that's put on us is put on us by this other group. So why do I, you know what I'm saying? I just look at it a little bit different. That's all I'm saying. That's why I was drilling down a little bit.
I think there's a commonality there.
Where they weren't taking care of the other people.
Wait a minute, Eric, before you go any further, let me just say one thing. You know, I think there is a nexus between us with regard to, you know, how we're thinking. It's just that I saw a crisis, and I saw people who looked like me, and they, you know, they just seem to be lost in the sauce there. It's like everybody else is fleeing, and these are young people. These are people who probably just didn't have the support other than what they had at home. I don't know what their living circumstances were or what was going on.
It was just a particular issue, particular area of study. Maybe their area wasn't fucked up, or maybe it wasn't that they couldn't get that education there. Maybe it was just that that particular area or emphasis wasn't offered in their Caribbean community, and they had to go there.
Maybe it's not always because our shit is fucked up,
and that's what I'm taking.
That's one way of looking at it. But you know, there's been rampant criticism about the University of the West Indies and what courses are being offered, and the cost of what it, you know, we have it fairly easy in this country, you know. I mean,
in
spite of all of
its
ills, you know, with regard to what's going on, you know, I still maintain I'm glad to a certain extent that my parents came here, you know, and all that business.
Wayne,
because I don't know what it would have been like.
Listen, I feel you. And but that is reminds me of a trope and an argument that when people are talking about the issues of the United States and then and it's often – I often find it that it's a white individual that says, but you know, it really is the best country on the face. Yeah, we fucking know that. But we also sell that to everybody in the world that we're the fucking greatest place. And when you get here, it's not really all peace.
Oh,
and
no,
peace.
It isn't.
So the whole exactly. the caveat to always say, well, you know, it's really the fuck that. I'm talking about the progress that needs to be made. Right. So like I said, if I'm supposed to be promised 40 acres of the motherfucking mule, and a motherfucker gives me a fucking donkey and a backyard, and then go turn around, but you live. You really know it's great. No, motherfucker, no. Give me what you promised.
I hear you.
So let's not always
qualify
to always say to give them an out, because to me, that gives something an out. It makes light of their – it takes away their responsibility and complicity in helping to reconcile the problem, because we need reconciliation. So whenever that type of thinking to me, I'm just saying for me, whenever that type of kind of line of thinking in a pathway, I think that while you are being particularly narrow with it, there'll be individuals who will take that and try to widen that gap and try to have it all encompassing. And then before you know it, the argument is, well, it's really not that bad. And just the fact that we've only voted the Voting Rights Act to be active for 25 years, it's not that bad that we need to you know what I'm saying? So it leads to me.
I'm going to agree with you. We have a lot. We still have problems here, Eric. I agree. I mean, I'm not blind. I'm not living in a vacuum. I live here. I see the racism that goes. That freaking trial in Kentucky today where the white police officer who shot Taylor was allowed to walk free like he had done nothing, you know? You know, I mean, George Floyd, you know, the nonsense that's happening in New York, you know, the blatant racism, I mean, I know it exists. I'm not blind to that. I also see where a country has been given independence even before the United States, because I mean this is the dichotomy that we're always proud. Well, you know, we did come here in chains, but we were able to free ourselves, and we're no longer part of the British Empire. Blah blah blah. And you all look. I have problems with people who think that they're better than others when we're all going through the same stuff. I'm just saying. You know, the same way you're looking out for your Jamaican national or your Trini Indian national in Ukraine. Here's a brother from Sudan. Here's a sister from Tanzania.
Right.
Here's somebody who has nowhere to go.
You're right. They could take them in. I understand 100%. But let me
take something
you just said, right? You said we all came here in chains and we freed ourselves from the British. No, that's not a continuous stream of action.
Let me just finish that, Ken.
We came here and changed. The motherfuckers who brought us here freed themselves from the British. So I just want to correct, so we understand how that story plays out in the movie. Because the way you just described it was like we was all in chains, white and black together, and it was the British that done brought us over. So we all free to know. We was always in chains. It was just some white people that wanted to get away from some other white people that decided to bring us over here in chains and have us to do the work. So that's what I'm saying. When we tell the story, the history and the nuances that come in there, because then our issues get watered down. So we got to be real sure and precise.
I'm in agreement. You know, I understand. I'm just saying the only Eric, the only difference here is that, you know, there was an imagery, and I don't even know how much that is projected with the average Caribbean person today, because the first time there was someone of color appointed as prime minister, and you know, the big notion was, well, all right. Well, we have a black prime minister, we have an Indian prime minister, but you all are still, you know, bowing to this white god in the United States. And I'm just saying, you know, that's irrelevant now. That to me, that argument doesn't even hold sway. My thing is that, yeah, we may have somebody who looks like, but we're supported by a Chinese economy, all right? We have somebody who looks like us, but we're dependent on all these other countries to sustain this imagery of independence, and we're not independent.
What are you talking about? Africa?
I'm talking about the Caribbean. We've been talking about. This is my point about where CARICOM should have been more active in this situation with Ukraine, and I'm not just saying them alone. There are a number of other organizations. Maybe it might be resources. Maybe I'm not getting the full press. Maybe I'm being blinded by some nonsense that Fox or some right wing organization is putting out there. Maybe the full story isn't out there, but there are people like us who are going to die. You know, that's my point. There are people like us who are going to die. And unfortunately, that need not be, because everybody else of a different shade are able to go to Hungary and some of the other countries that are part of NATO because they don't want black faces involved. That's my point. We have a need. We have a need to be more proactive. And it's not dismissing the horrors that we've gone through in this country. You know, but this is where I was born. This is part, you know, and I'm not dismissing my ancestry. You know, I mean, I think we're on the precipice of World War III. There's nothing stopping this wild man dropping bombs over here. You know, so we have to walk gingerly. And I don't mean to monopolize the conversation. That was just my point. And I don't know if Byron agrees with me or, you know. And I welcome anybody who has taken issue with what I had to say. Call. Give out the number. We can talk about it.
So here's what I first heard about this part of this. And, B, I want you to jump in here and give your perspective. But let me just jump throw this out. when I first heard about, you know, the whole situation going down, I was like, wow, why should I care about this white man raging war on these other white people? And then, of course, obviously, because the humanitarian aspect of their free country and yada, yada, yada. Then about a week later, I hear, oh, they're being racist to Africans trying to leave. And I kind of felt like my initial gut instinct was correct. But that is the cynical nature that the world has come to show me, that they think that dark-skinned people are treated like shit. And so it's really unfortunate what's going on there. And I was wondering, well, what the hell? What are they doing over there? How the hell did they get the black people getting to Ukraine? And I saw one interview with some brother was over there, and he's living over there. And why? I mean, I understand. I've been to Europe. Great. I get it. Fantastic. Wonderful. But when you realize the world over seems to want to make dark-skinned people the brunt of everything, then all bets are off for me. I'm not going to fucking have a humanitarian bone in my body if I'm supporting you and it turns around that you're shitting on my people. No, fuck it. Get out your own shit. Fuck you. Here, I'm going to send the boats. Here, I'm going to send the planes like Wayne said. We're sending the planes. All you darkies, get on this plane. Fuck the rest of the motherfuckers. And I understand it's a messed up reaction, a messed up way to respond, but listen, well, you get tired of turning the other fucking cheek all the time. You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. So the hell with that shit. If we're gonna be respectful, we need to be more transactional with our shit. That's where I'm coming from. Because at this point in my life, I've seen how all that other bullshit is just lip service. Because unless you have the power to make somebody do something, unless they perceive that you have the power, like, well, we better rethink this because the consequence is too motherfucking great. Unless you got that behind you, then you just talking loud and saying that like the Godfather used to say. What do you say, Byron?
Well, you know, on two levels. I'm going to hold to my original comment about white people fighting other white people, because at the point at which, and let's engage this from the geopolitical concept of the same nation that dropped two bombs on a nation of color people, Japan, Hiroshima, and Nagasaki, also must prove to the rest of the world that if you are indeed the baddest MF on the planet, you don't stand for this crap that this thug has done. Now, this is where my nonviolence steps out and says, you know what? When dealing with a bully, the best way to get his attention is to take a 2x4 and slap the crap out of him. Mm-hmm. He'll do one of two things. He has 10 seconds to get up, as the professional boxing count would go, or stay down and stay knocked out, because you can, at this point, in this whole geopolitical drama that's playing itself out, the United States and the NATO countries need to put a stern, stern request and demand to Putin. Not only do you back up out of Ukraine, but we are going to tell you right now, you have about 60 minutes. I'm only giving you 60 minutes. Because in the next 60 minutes, every nuclear weapon in Europe and Russia, in the United States, are going to be pointed at you. Now, do you really want to engage Armageddon? I don't think so. Because at the point at which this bully can't back up his own troops that are in Ukraine right now, he's selling wolf tickets. And the way you stop him in his tracks is to say to him, this is not going to happen, and we will in turn make sure that there doesn't exist you or your country. Now, that's an obviously kind of threat that we as the United States of America, we did the same thing to Japan. Now, I want to say this because if you know about what happened, why Japan got into the war with us, now, this is where history really is repeating itself. The United States threw a blockade to keep Japan from getting Southeast Asian oil. And when we did that,
we pushed them so they had to respond.
That's right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was over what?
Oil.
Oil. Okay, so where are we right now? Why is our gasoline prices exceeding $5 all across the country? And who's making the money?
And why are we buying Russian oil?
ExxonMobil, BP, they're making the money, and it's over $110 a gallon a barrel. Come on. That's not going in my pocket. So who's getting the money? So if we're going to put sanctions on Russia, we need to put sanctions on the entire oil industry. Don't just stop there. You're the ones who are raping and pillaging the rest of the free world because you want profit.
That's right.
And it comes as simple as that, guys, because at this point, now you say, well, what are we going to do? How are we going to stop Putin? Well, it's very easy. He's already crossed the line. You're going to draw another line in the sand? How many more lines are you going to put in the sand? Same way with dealing with these politicians who participated in treason. You keep drawing a line. And at some point, if the justice is not going to be leveled on the criminals who are perpetuating the insanity and the chaos of the world, then this whole thing is going to fall apart. Now, I don't believe it's going to fall apart based over some oil, based over some guys who are invading Ukraine. They can't even get gasoline to their troops. They stranded their troops. And why is not NATO strafing those military trucks that are lined up 40 miles? They're easy targets. Come on now. With the no-fly zone that they've got, all right, if you're letting him threaten you this way, then you're saying, okay, we'll let you go as far as we want to let you go, but at this point, you're not even drawing the line in the sand, so you sanction all of his oligarchs. Fine. That's just cutting off their money. Now your ruble is less than 1 cent? You lost 1 cent to the global community market? You can't sustain that. That's why at the other end of the day, you say, you know what, Putin? We got your number. Now, here's the deal. You got 30 minutes. 60 is off the table. 30 minutes to pull your troops back, or we're going to take action that will eliminate the entire 180,000 troops that you got on in that country and on the border. That's how easy it is.
Yep.
And I agree with you, Byron. I'm the only thing is I would not want to see, and I guess this is where Biden's coming from. He just pulled us out of Afghanistan. He doesn't want us, because the Republicans are going to turn around and use that against us. Blah blah blah. Although some of them have been talking, using that as a talk. Oh, he's not being forceful enough, and blah blah blah. This. You know, and that's what saddens me about it. It's like the freaking misinformation that goes on, you know. But, you know, you're right. It just seems to be oil and black faces that are always the victims or the catalyst for bringing about all sorts of unnecessary confusion. And
Joe Manchin held up the Bring Back Better plan for what? Coal? Coal?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he held up the entire nation? At some point it's like, Joe Manchin, who the hell do you think you are? You got black mung all up in your state of West Virginia and can't even cure that. But you're going to open the door because you want your Republicans to keep fueling and filling your pockets up with
exactly
money.
And cinema. You know, they should
That's
be
right. exactly.
they should be expunged from the Democratic Party. And I don't know why people tiptoe around that. Same way Democrats call for Taylor Greene and Boebert to be removed too. You know, it's just crazy. I'm just tired of the racial factor. It bothers me. No matter what corner of the earth, you're right. We are global. We are all over the place, Byron. And it's just unfortunately that, you know, in a time of crisis, we still have to, you know, bow. And I really think I'm proud of some of the coverage that I've seen from some of the blacks involved the repertorial work that's going on. But I also feel for these innocent people who went there to get an education because they couldn't afford it in their own home country, and this is what's going on. And we have to do better than that. I hope you know, I'm torn. I don't want to see anybody go out there and fight, but it bothers me to see what's going on with these people. You know, every time I see a bombing or, you know, just to know that so many people have died in the last 7 days, you know, it's just unfathomable, you know.
You know, there's today in history, and this is something to really reflect on, guys. Today in history was the Missouri Compromise. You know what that was? Separating free states from slave states. That's the compromise we're in right now. Today,
so why don't you break down what exactly that did?
What that meant was, as the nation was growing, the compromise allowed states like Kansas and Missouri. Kansas came in as a free state, and by the way, that's why John Brown raided Lawrence, Kansas, because the Rough Riders from Missouri were trying to bring Kansas in as a Missouri was a slave state. West Virginia was a free state. Virginia was a slave state. So when you're talking about all of the issues relative to why didn't Reconstruction work? Why didn't the 14th Amendment work? Why didn't the 65 voting rights work? Because you had individuals, both Republican and Democrat, who were participating in actively committing treason to jeopardize the true value of what those amendments were giving to people of color. And
you mean like what's going on nowadays?
Yes, right. Exactly. And so you got states who are trying to actually secede from the nation again.
Mm-hmm.
They got 23 states right now who want to engage in a constitutional convention to balance the budget and restrict more people of color from coming in this country and participating in the voting rights that they have so richly earned and deserve. And because of the Electoral College, once again, that goes back to the 3/5 rule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? All right. So, I mean, literally, the only city engaged in a filibuster where you have to have 60 votes to pass a law is the nation's capital and the federal government. There's not a single state in this country, of the 50 states, not a single one of them use a filibuster to create legislation. So what is that telling you?
Well, they do. Well, what is Texas? Because Texas, when that...
Texas. They couldn't even... Texas is in such a bad shape.
That woman Wendy Davis that made a good run for the governor, remember when she did the filibuster thing for a number of hours? So there was some way down there that they do allow that on the state level, right, to a certain degree where it does influence or at least delays some legislation from being passed, right? I think that this type of filibuster or the way they have it here with the super vote majority is what you're talking about, but also the fact that it seems like, you know, it's not a speaking filibuster, you know, it's just a filibuster by objection. You know, remember the old rule that the person has to actually come to the floor and hold the floor.
Right,
that's
exactly.
A filibuster. Hold the floor, you know, time I yield my time and everybody yields their time and the person holds the floor. And so that was, you know, like the Mr. Smith goes to Washington shit. That used to be what it was until they changed the rules of the filibuster.
And on this day, Eric and Wayne, on this day in 1865 to 1872, you know, this day the Freedmen's Bureau is formed. And do you remember why that was formed? That was formed to help Reconstruction actually take place. To give the same rights and privileges to African Americans. And as a result of that, we had congressmen and senators from the state of South Carolina, from Louisiana, from North Carolina. I mean, y'all remember Wilmington, North Carolina? You know what happened there, right?
Right.
So at the point of which we don't need to, what we really need is to make sure the history is factually told. Because at the point of which you got what's going on right now, with the GOP, who don't want to pass anything that's got the Democratic Party's name on it, is actually participating actively in committing obstruction of justice and treason.
Right, the way they hold up a lot of votes, a lot of those key votes. As we go out, we got like another 4 minutes. I don't know if either one of you guys saw the SAG Awards. I didn't see the Will Smith one. You saw him, Byron?
Yeah. I don't watch the awards anymore. I read the reviews and who got what and what. You know, there was something I wanted to say about the Super Bowl a couple of weeks ago that actually all of you all saw it. They didn't stand for the Black National Anthem when they were singing out there. Mary Mary was singing out in the parking lot.
Yeah, some people were standing. I saw some people. I saw part of the halftime.
But there was a lot of white folks who refused to stand because, the NFL, in every game, in every city this year, they opened with the National Black Anthem. So it wasn't as if it was a surprise for the people sitting in that stadium that there was a request to stand and honor the National Black Anthem. But let me tell you what they got duped into doing. Remember when Kendrick Lamar came on and did his routine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, there was not a single song sung by the hip-hop community that had a bitch or a whore or a nigga
in any
of their lyrics.
Right.
But you see, when Kendrick Lamar was doing his routine, who was he replicating? Was that not the same routine that Fight the Power was using with the Fruit of Islam?
I don't even remember. But let me because we're running out of time, man. we veered over here from the SAG Awards. But let me get back to the award season. I want to talk about my Ruth Carter received the Vanguard Award at the NAACP Image Awards that took place the night before the SAG Awards. Kind of the Black Oscars, I guess you would say, since that. They traditionally wanted to leave a lot of Black people out of that situation. But, Ruth is my classmate from Hampton, is a Hampton graduate.
That's right.
And after all of these some odd 30 years in the business, she's getting her just due as an extremely accomplished costume designer. I remember when she chose the costume design track, as a matter of fact, to be her emphasis in school. But she's actually out of Robbie Reed, who went on to be notable casting director, and was my classmate as well, and Ray Dowell, who was an actress, very beautiful actress, who was in She's Gotta Have It, played the lesbian, who I introduced to Spike, and that's kind of how she made her introduction there. But Ruth was the strongest actress out of the three, and it's ironic that both her and Robbie was a very good actress, too. Both of them went into behind-the-scenes work, you know, which is really where most of the power is until you become a big star. But we got about 90 seconds. Why don't you give your brothers give the people your send-off? Brother Wayne, what do you want to say to the people? Leave them your parting thought.
I didn't mean to dominate the conversation tonight, but, you know, the bottom line is let's keep hope alive. I hope there isn't a World War III. And, you know, I just hope things get better. That's all. Keep my fingers crossed.
Brother Wayne Gilman, we'll talk to you again, my brother. Brother Byron Saunders, give the people your last little bit of words that you want to leave them with.
This is Women's History Month. Honor your mothers, your sisters, your daughters. Give them the high praise that they deserve. I'm honoring my mother today because today would have been her 99th birth. Brilliant woman who was Condoleezza Rice with the National Security Agency before Condoleezza Rice even stepped into the job.
All right.
I honor our sisters. Black girls magic. That's what it's all about. Peace and love always.
Thank you, Brother Byron Saunders. We'll talk to you again. Brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm Kay's Son. We had another hot discussion tonight, as we always do, getting a little bit. And thanks for listening. Check us out again. I know it's a Thursday, but, you know, we want to keep you on your toes a little bit because you stay ready. You don't have to get ready. I'm out of here. Citizen Payne, my mom's on assignment in heaven. K, Son and Friends.